They give us an experience. It's a story of a life, and it draws you in emotionally. It also provokes your thinking, right? So movies are not just entertainment. They are much more than that. And especially for me, when I look at this clip, the part where Ellie lost her unborn baby, that reminds me of a similar episode in my own life. And those are the things that it draws out some of your personal life story to connect with the movie. Let me have a show of hands. Who has never heard of Brad Pitt? Okay. Or who has heard of Brad Pitt? Okay. Nicole Kidman, all right. Andy Lau, the Hong Kong singer, all right. Shah Rukh Khan, yeah, okay. What about Khao Bhat? Okay, one or two lah. Okay. So I guess more people here know more about movie stars than they do about world-famous theologians like Khao Bhat. Okay, that's a fact. And for those of us who are in your teens or your 20-something year old, movies are just part of life, isn't it? It's just part of life. And our young people are more up to date with what's coming soon from Hollywood, TVB, or Korean drama than perhaps on any other topic. Because we live in an image-driven culture. We live in a movie-watching culture. Otherwise, Tanjung Golden Village and Golden Screen Cinemas will not be jam-packed during the weekends. Or if you need more evidence, just try to look around your neighborhood. Try to find one home that is without a television set today. Yeah, that's one. It's not easy, right? It's not easy. You can find one. Or do an experiment. Walk around your neighborhood and do a count. How many homes have an Astro satellite dish installed? See, one only don't have, you see? Huh? They use hip TV, right? So you see, Astro satellite dish with 50 different channels transmitted into your living room at the press of one button. How fantastic is that? So we live in this kind of culture, and when the lights dim in a cinema and the silver screen is lowered, something magical happens. Movies are like a magic portal that transport all of us to another place, to another world, to another planet. It can bring us to the grand castles of Gondor in Middle-earth, or to a galaxy far, far away where Jedi Knights and Sith Lords battle for supremacy in the universe. Or it can bring us to the wonderful ecosystem of Pandora, where the blue Na'vi tribes live, right? So movies are this magical portal that bring us to another universe. They can enchant us or thrill us. They make us cry, make us laugh, or scare the living daylights out of us. So movies, they convey meaning. They convey values. They change the way we think and how we feel about things. What is good? What is important in life? A good movie, if it's a good movie, it takes raw materials out of the stuff of life. Our friendships, our relationships, our conflicts, our search, our deep longing for meaning, for significance, and turn all these raw materials into an experience by creating a picture of reality, by creating characters that we can all relate to. Movies are like a visual storybook that show us insights that we would otherwise have missed because we are not trained to look at a life like that. So, like the short video that we watched, it not only makes you sad, makes you smile, and draws you emotionally into the story, it drives home some deep lessons about life as well. So today, I'd like to consider with you how we can engage movies. Over the centuries, there are different patterns of communication in our human society, how they have evolved. So the next slide will show how that history has been like, okay? At the dawn of history, how are stories being passed down from one generation to another? It's through word of mouth. It's an oral culture. The focus is on the ear, right? Think of our grandfather stories or our grandmother stories or the storytellers that we call Penglipo Lara. You know, in Malaysia, we have Penglipo Lara, right? So that's how stories get passed on. But then we move into a literate age where the focus now is on the eye. Think of the Renaissance period. Think of libraries. Think of the reading of books, the invention of the printing press. And about 100 years ago, we crossed over to a post-literate age where now the focus is on both the ear as well as the eye. Think of movies, television, news broadcasts. And now with the internet, with YouTube, social media, smartphones, perhaps we have come to a digital age where people are not only satisfied with consuming culture, they want to create culture of their own. They want to upload their own movies. They want to upload their own music videos and pictures and stories and so on. So, and there are some talented young people in SleepyC who are already doing that, aren't they? Have you checked out the recent cover songs by Eugene C, the worship leader in Subang? So amazing stuff, right? So we are already doing that. Our young people, they're very talented. They're already not only consuming culture, but they are creating culture. So if that is how people communicate today, how does our Christian faith now relate to the world of movies? How do we relate to that? Or you put it another way, what has Jerusalem, the city of God, to do with Hollywood, the city of films? Well, for a long time, the church has a love-hate relationship with movies. Sometimes the love affair is passionate and hot. Sometimes it's cold and distant. So there's a love-hate relationship. For some of us, movies, they are often frowned upon. We don't like movies because they promote worldliness, they promote violence and sexual permissiveness, right? And that is quite often the case, and we are right to reject these negative elements. But we cannot throw the baby out with the bathwater. There are good things inside movies as well. And for some Christians, movies are valuable only when they depict biblical stories, okay? The Ten Commandments, the greatest story ever told, the Jesus film, the Prince of Egypt. Oh, those are good movies, biblical stories, right? But apart from that, they don't see any spiritual value in non-biblical kind of stories. So that is one end of the spectrum. On the other side of the spectrum, perhaps more descriptive of city people like us, we may just embrace movies so much that we just mindlessly go along with whatever is offered in the box office. Whatever they sell, we buy it, okay? And we say, oh, my friends are watching this movie, so why can't I? I also want to watch, okay? I just want to have some fun on him, all right? Why think so much, okay? So like the Pacific Rim movie, to borrow a phrase, we drift, you know? We let our minds drift along with the show, and we no longer step back and reflect. Is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? Okay, what's the impact, okay? So like fish in water, the fish in the water doesn't realize that it's wet, right? So in the same way, television and movies are so much a part of our daily life that we may not be aware of its impact on us, for better or for worse. So I think today it's good that we engage with movies and think how, as Christians, we can approach movies, okay? And you can think of it as the practical application of our earlier sermons, like Elder Tom has preached on engaging culture, and Eugene Yap talking about creating culture. So if you like to go into the biblical exegesis, if you missed that sermon, do check it out on our online podcast from the CDPC website, okay? Check it out, okay? And a special shout out to our podcast listeners out there, okay? One or two of you, okay? So let's do that together, okay? So here are three ways that Christians approach culture. And you can think of it like Kung Fu technique. Sometimes you can use approach one, approach two. Sometimes approach one, approach three. So it's not mutually exclusive. You can use them all together. Sometimes you use different technique, okay? A different approach. Okay, the first one is this. The approach of avoidance and caution. The approach of avoidance and caution, I call it dare to say no. Dare to say no, okay? This may sound obvious, but it needs to be said that some movies are better left unwatched. There's benefit in leaving some movies unwatched, some horrible music unlistened to, some junk food unconsumed. And we must not worry too much about being labeled uncool or uncultured or legalistic, because it's more important that our moral compass is pointed to the direction of holiness. So we need to discern what we see in the light of the gospel, and we need to know where our limits are. We need to know where to draw the line. there are many gray areas in life, right? And food is one of them. So movies also one of them. So how do we handle gray areas where there's no black and white answer? So for example, food, okay? Nasi lemak, pinang char kway teow, klang bak kut teh, okay? They are like every gift of God's world, they are good gift, all right? Good, they are good, okay? But, it can become a bad thing if you consume it excessively, recklessly, and selfishly, okay? It's a good thing, but if you consume it recklessly, excessively, and selfishly, it becomes a bad thing. It's a good thing if you eat it, not as something we must have. You know, my precious. You know, I must have it. I can't live without it, okay? That's bad, okay? Even though it's a good thing, if you must have it, it becomes a bad thing. But we can consume it as something we can have. It's a gift of God. It's a good gift from God's hand. And we receive it and we enjoy it. So ask yourself these questions. Am I free? Am I free to refrain from this good thing as much as I am free to enjoy them? Can I say no? Okay, can I say no? Although there's no clear biblical command to say you cannot watch movie. Okay, no such thing. Okay, or you cannot drink coffee. Okay, no such thing. But if you're not able to go without television for one day, or we cannot go without Starbucks for one day, then it becomes an obsession. It becomes an addiction. It can even become a bondage. So if you are so insistent that I have freedom, I have the Christian freedom to enjoy these things, and we look down on other people who do not enjoy arty-arty kind of films, then perhaps we are also legalistic. That's another form of legalism, pretending to be free, okay? So what I'm saying is that there are times we need to say, yes, I'm free to enjoy these things, but because of my personality, because of my particular weakness in this area, because of my tendencies, and because I don't want to stumble other people, my friends, my children, and for the sake of the gospel, I think it is a wise thing to refrain from watching this particular movie. So we need to have the courage to say no. For example, personally, if you give me a remote control, I can sit down on the sofa and surf channels for hours without stop. Okay, that's me. Okay, so if that is also your weakness, then you need to be extra careful how you exercise your freedom. So cultural exposure is always related to a person's maturity and spiritual maturity as well. So even an excellent movie that I would highly recommend, like Shawshank Redemption, I think it's a great movie, right? But you have to think about the person, you know, it's not suitable for some people, right? Some of the scenes may not be appropriate for some, maybe for a 12-year-old would not be appropriate. So cultural exposure is always related to a person's maturity. And you are in the best position to decide where to draw the line and decide what films, what movies you are comfortable with. So ask yourself, when I watch this movie, when I have this habit of watching television, is it shaping my desires in a certain way? Is it helping me to worldliness, or is it helping me to holiness and godliness? Are they drawing me closer to God? Are they drawing me away from God? So that is one. And as we know about the obvious dangers of movies, right? About all these guns, sex, materialism, all this. Okay, we know about that. But there are less obvious spiritual dangers also. I'd like to highlight that. And you can find it in the Kairos magazine on the movies at the back there, free of charge. Go check it out. So in that edition of Kairos magazine, I got some of these points. Some of the less obvious spiritual dangers. Oh, can you go before? So, what are these less obvious dangers? Okay, for example, the French thinker called Jacques Ellul, he points out that person who has the power to edit images into sequence and offer to you as a movie, as a news broadcast, that person has the power to decide for you what is reality. He has already chosen for you, and you are obliged to follow the rhythm that he has set, what he has shown you to be reality. And let me explain what I mean. Remember how our mainstream media, TV1, TV2, TV3, reported the Bursay rallies last time? Remember that? Someone has already decided for us what is reality, right? And the reality is you don't see a multiracial, peaceful crowd of thousands of people. The reality is you see a few something loitering around an empty street, throwing bottles at the police, right? So somebody has already chosen which image to show you, and that is your reality. If you have never experienced that, and all you see is the news, so that is what impression that you get. We are fed with images. And the movie director, in the same way, has the power to influence your thinking in that way. Reality can be replaced by this artificial construct in the movie, like The Matrix, and it distorts your perception. It manipulates your opinion. So in the same way, Dr. Ng Kam Wing, he also says that in an image-driven culture, there are some things that you need to be aware of. Perhaps in an image-driven culture, it can have a negative impact on the education of our children and also on our spiritual health. TV, iPads, and video games can overstimulate our children and stifle their ability to sit quietly and read and use language actively. And they're overstimulated with fast and furious pictures and sights and sounds. So they cannot have the ability to sustain their attention for a long time. They just jump up and down and can't sit still and say, here we are now, entertain us. Here we are now, entertain us. But true education requires patience, reflection, and careful and patient reading. So that is why we have the library, the children's library, that seeks to encourage children to be a lifelong reader. Why is that important? If you see the power of the word versus the power of the image, reading a book allows you to control the pace by which you receive information. Reading invites you to think over and connect the words printed on the page to sentences, to paragraphs, to chapters. And you can sit down and pause at any time. You can stop the information input and then begin to explore this imaginary world described by the author, a world of adventure and beauty and wonder. So learning requires this patience, careful reflection. For some of us, movies, who has time for movies, right? Family, children, work, and so on. And I know what you mean. We can hardly find time to watch a lot of movies these days. And so for me, I need to carefully choose what kind of movies to watch, to be discerning about what to watch so that we don't waste time and money. And one way to do that is like this. I try to find out in advance, what is the genre of the movie? Okay, is it a romantic comedy? Is it an action thriller? Or is it a slasher movie? You know what is a slasher movie? I Know What You Did Last Summer. That kind of movie. When you know the genre is a slasher movie, you know the formula of the story, right? You know in advance, before watching the movie, you know it's about a psychopathic killer, all out to kill a lot of people in all sorts of interesting ways. Okay, until the final girl. It's always a girl at the end. Don't ask me why. And the girl finally defeated the killer and then escaped unharmed. So you know the formula of the story, right, before you watch it. So if I know the genre of the movie in advance, then I know the formula of the story and I can decide, okay, whether to watch it or not, okay? And another way we can decide, be discerning about what movies we can watch and not waste our time and money is through some of these solid online Christian resources. Some of my favorite websites, The Maris, for example, has a very excellent online resource that helps you have some idea what is coming soon from Hollywood, give you a good summary of what to expect, what's the background information on the production, the directors, the actors, and also a biblical evaluation of the major themes in that movie. So I like to surf these websites and try to get some information before deciding to buy or to watch that movie. So I'll choose some of the recommended ones, okay? So hopefully some of these resources can help you to think through and to be discerning about choosing the movies to watch, okay? So the first approach, okay? The approach to dare to say no, okay? Second approach is dare to say yes, okay? Not very creative, huh? Dare to say yes. This approach of dialogue and engagement. The approach of dialogue and engagement. So having said all that about the dangers, the risks, and all that, but we cannot totally abandon movies. We cannot totally abandon it because our modern world, our friends, our society is immersed in the movie world. So otherwise, if we let this conversation be dominated by other voices, then Christians, we do not have the ability to take part in it, and we cannot influence it. So we need to talk about movies that we watch in order to celebrate what is good, celebrate what is good, what is beautiful, and also to clarify our own positions on some of the life's questions that are being discussed in the movies. And in order to do that, we need to train our eyes to understand the language of movies. And not just to offer knee-jerk response, like counting how many curse words in the movie and then decide whether it's good or bad on that basis alone. So in fact, there are many movies that we can watch redemptively. Redemptively, that means we can enter into a conversation with a movie with the Bible on one hand and with a keen eye on the film and understand that film on the film's own terms, okay? And not to bring our own preconceived ideas, our biases, our assumptions in the movie and let it have a fair say in what it wants to say, okay? So we must first allow another point of view from the movie to enter in and interact with us and to engage our perspective, okay? So what I'm saying is theological analysis must come after, not before, the aesthetic experience of watching and appreciating a film or any work of art for that matter. So it's a kind of open-minded approach that says, I hear what you say, but I don't need to believe all you say. Okay? So when we do that, we may be surprised when you watch certain films, there are some aha moments that come that enrich our perspective on life. And I'm sure many of you have experienced some magical movie moments like that. But let me share with you a real story of a friend of mine called Yok Yao. Our friend, Yok Yao. Some of our friends, we know him. He's Dr. Yap Yok Yao, a specialist in Twin Towers Medical Center now. But this movie is called Awakenings. So this is an example of how a movie can impact our lives if you are open to it, if you watch it with an open heart. The movie is called Awakenings, released in 1990. And it impacted this young man's life, Yok Yao, at a time of his life when he is a pre-university student trying to get good grades in school, but he doesn't know what to do with his life. He's not sure what to do. So when this movie was released, Robin Williams plays the character of Dr. Malcolm Sayer, a neurologist. And he spends his entire life helping patients with a kind of coma. It's called post-encephalitic coma, caused by degeneration of nerve cells. So because of the nerve cells degenerated, they enter into a coma. Okay, so this Dr. Malcolm, accidentally discovered a wonder drug that could bring back these patients back to consciousness, back to life. But unfortunately, the effect is not permanent. It only lasts a short time frame, but a very precious time frame where these patients can recapture their lost youth, when they can begin to connect with their friends and their relatives. So it's very unfortunate. It's a sad movie. At the end of the movie, the patients, although they are revived for a period of time, they are doomed to slip back into a state of catatonia again. So they are trapped behind frozen, empty stairs. So in the movie, as Dr. Sayers struggle through the tragedy, he says, we can hide behind the veil of science. We can pretend we know a lot of things about science, but reality is we do not know what went wrong any more than we know what went right. What we do know is, as the chemical window closes, another awakening appears. The human spirit is more powerful than any drug, and that is what we need to nourish in our patients. And that movie changed Yok Yao's life for good. At the end of the movie, he cried. He cried bitterly as he felt the suffering of the patients. And he was inspired by Dr. Sayer's passion for his work. So that movie actually helped him to discover his vocation, his calling by God to be a scientist, to be a healer, to be a friend to his patients. So good movies can actually be a vehicle of common grace, a vehicle where God can actually speak and touch our lives in a deep way. And he who has eyes, let him see. Of course, the fun part of a movie is not only in finding some hidden spiritual message inside, okay, But many films do explore and confront us with serious themes about life, about faith, about reason, about social issues. And they convey our society's fundamental beliefs. What are symbols that are powerful in our society? What are the myths of our culture? And tell us what our culture thinks about the meaning of life. So as they do so, Christians, we are invited to enter into a dialogue over these themes where the Bible and the movie connect and they meet together. So we need to watch with our eyes wide open in order to appreciate them. So the next slide has a short sample of films that explore such issues like biotechnology, faith and reason, the life of Pi, The Matrix, exploring free will and artificial intelligence, and The Lorax, the cartoon Lorax, Wall-E, explore creation care, and about consumerism is a good discussion on that. So perhaps as parents, perhaps as Christian cell group, small group leaders, we can think about how we can creatively and carefully use some of these movies in order to teach our children, our small group members, and help them to explore in the discussion about how we can enter into a conversation and explore these serious topics. It's more interesting than doing a book study, right? Movie story study is more interesting, right? So perhaps you can try that, experiment with that. And in order to do this effectively, we need to know the right, to ask the right questions. We need to ask the right questions. And how do we ask the right questions? As we explore all these movies, how do we ask the right questions and enter into the dialogue in a conversation in the movie? Well, in any movie, the story of the main characters, the story of the hero, is always an argument for a way of life, for a way of seeing the world, a worldview, a philosophy of life. In a lot of stories, something is lost and needs to be recovered, needs to be redeemed, redemption. But how? How can this thing that is lost be redeemed? So as the hero changes his life direction, changes his attitudes, changes his assumptions about the world, that, take note of that, because that is actually what the filmmakers are trying to tell us about what is good, what is real, what is important in life, in the real world. So when watching a movie, I got these questions from an interview with Brian Godawa, who is the author of a book called Hollywood Worldviews. Think of these questions as you approach the movie. Think of these questions. What is the character flaw? What is the problem faced by the hero at the beginning? Okay? And what makes him change his mind in the story as the story develops? What makes him change his mind? And number three, what does he learn about life, about the way life ought or ought not be lived? And number four, what is different about the way he sees the world at the end from the way he sees it at the beginning? So these questions will help to draw out what is the thing that he's trying to say in this movie. For example, Lord of the Rings. Okay, the hero, Frodo, Frodo. Okay, how does he see, what is the problem at the beginning? What is the problem that Frodo faces in the beginning? Okay, perhaps one of the conflict that he faces is, he's a hobbit, Frodo is a hobbit, a peace-loving little creature. He wants to stay in a comfortable little home in Shire, in his little village. He doesn't want adventure. That's how he sees the world at the beginning, right? Then the second question, what makes him change his mind? Gandalf. He found a ring, the ring of power that everybody is looking for, that can destroy the world. And he needs to go to Mordor, this volcano, and throw the ring inside the volcano and destroy it, or else the world will end, right? That makes him change. So what does he learn of what life ought to be lived? And how does he see at the end, how does he see life at the end? So through the journey, through the story, the three movies, he learns that, well, there is something more important than comfort, right? Sacrifice, perseverance, doing the right thing, being faithful in the little things. So these are some of the messages that come across as you ask these questions. So asking such questions and offering answers in a biblical manner help us to apply our faith, help us to connect our Christian beliefs both in the real world, R-E-E-L, real world, as well as in the real world, R-E-A-L, both in the movie world and as well as the real world. Okay, so that is the approach of dialogue and engagement. The last one. The last approach is called divine encounter. And I got this approaches from a book called Real Spirituality by Johnston. Okay, you can check out the book. A lot of people experience, what I mean by divine encounter, okay? A lot of people experience a sense of wonder, a sense of awe, even mystical experience when they are confronted with something heart-stoppingly beautiful, something breathtakingly beautiful. It can be listening to an orchestra playing Handel's Messiah, a beautiful piece, or it can be looking at a beautiful painting in a museum, a masterpiece, or you can even be scuba diving in a beautiful coral reef. Even scuba diving will give you this sense of beauty, of the divine. And people often come away from encountering such beauty with a sense of the transcendence, a sense of transcendence, a glimpse of the divine. Have you experienced something like that? Yeah. I know of a friend who went scuba diving. She doesn't believe in God before that, but she went, when she came out, she believed in God. So that's the experience called transcendence. When you are confronted with something beautiful, you have this divine encounter. That's what I mean. So movies, in the same way, can be a vehicle for divine transcendence. Okay? And in this area, I think the Catholic film critics are better at it than the Protestants or theologians, because of their value on icons. So, for example, I think you get the idea what I mean by that, the divine encounter. So, there is a scene in the movie called American Beauty about a broken young man. And he came from a very dysfunctional family, and he's very broken, very messed up. And one day, he came across a plastic bag swirling around in the wind. Just a plastic bag, okay? It was dancing around like a little kid, inviting him to play with it. And he stood there and videotaped the whole thing for 15 minutes. And he said, "That is the day I realized that there is another world behind these things that we see. That's the day that I realized that this incredibly benevolent force behind the universe that wanted me to know that there's nothing to be afraid of, ever. Sometimes there's so much beauty in this world that I feel that I cannot take it anymore and my heart is about to cave in." So to us, it may seem like a mundane event, but that encounter with a dancing, graceful plastic bag gave him a sense of transcendence. Something can happen like that. So it is with a movie that is well-made. Like any great work of art, it can be an opportunity for a burning bush experience. If we watch it with hearts open, common grace, God's common grace is everywhere, ready to burst forth when we least expect it. So these are the three Christian approaches to movies. Now, how do we apply it? So I'd like to use a case study to see how we can apply it concretely into an example. And I choose the movie called Saving Private Ryan, a war movie by Steven Spielberg. Who has watched it? Yeah, got some number. Okay, Saving Private Ryan. Okay, good, good idea. Okay, so let's do it. How do we apply these three approaches? Okay, but before that, let me give you a bit of background about the story for those who have not watched it. This is a story about 8 soldiers. They were given a mission to rescue one single man, Private James Ryan. And he was behind enemy lines, so it's a very dangerous mission. So why is it so important? Why 8 people must risk their lives to save one person? Well, the reason is Ryan's 3 brothers have all been recently killed in action and left with only one mother, a single mother. So he's the only son left. So the generals wanted him to be brought back alive, okay, and take care of the mother. So that's why the 8 people, 8 soldiers were sent to a rescue mission. And at one point, Captain Miller, the Tom Hanks character, is okay. The Tom Hanks character, Captain Miller, he asked this question: "Whoa, 8 people go and save one person, risk our lives for this person. You know, this Ryan guy, he better be worth it. He better be worth it. I'm risking my life to save his life, you know. And he better go home and cure cancer or cure some diseases and invent the longer-lasting light bulb or something. He better make something out of his life, okay? We're risking our lives to save him." And as it turns out, the rescue mission was so dangerous, it claims the lives of all the 8 soldiers, one after another. All of them died. And at the final battle scene, as the Tom Hanks character, the captain himself, he himself died, his last words to Private Ryan, do you remember the last words? James? Earn this. Earn this. Oh, is there? Answer is there. Yeah, he says, James, earn it. Earn it. Earn this. Earn the sacrifice that we have made for you. We have died for you. We have laid down our life to save you. So live a life that is worthy of our sacrifice. So, and then 50 years pass, and in the closing sequence of the movie, you see an elderly Ryan, he's old, and he was returning to the captain's grave, okay? And he came with his children, his wife, his grandchildren, and as he kneels before the grave, and tears fill his eyes, he says, "My family is with me today. And not a day passes where I do not think of your words that day on the bridge. I've tried to live my life as best as I can. I hope that was enough. I hope that at least in your eyes, I've lived a good life. And then I hope that at least in your eyes, I've earned what all of you have done for me." So, and then he turns to his wife and he cried and says, tell me I've lived a good life. Tell me that I'm a good man. Tell me I've lived a good life." So James Ryan lived his entire life after this experience with the last words of Captain Miller ringing in his ears. Earn it. Earn it. So how should we respond to this movie? Well, there are many ways we can respond. And if you take the first approach, okay, dare to say no, some Christians will say, well, I choose to avoid this movie. It's R-rated. And in the open sequence, there's this battle scene, right? Very violent, very gory battle scene on a beach of Normandy as they fought. There's a very graphic, violent battle. Or some Christians may be very offended by the soldiers' language, okay? A lot of profanities there, right? So that's one possible response. Don't watch it, okay? But other Christians may look at it and say, hey, war, World War II, it is violent. It is a realistic depiction of war. War is messy. War is gory. So they may accept it, but they may be very cautious. They may exercise caution that about the excessive violence. But they will want to enter into a conversation, into a dialogue with the movie, perhaps on the theme of war, in this movie. So, for example, we can discuss things like, can war ever be righteous? Can war ever be just? And World War II is often a textbook example of a just war. So when you watch all this violence, all this blood in a real war, is war ever right? So you can explore things like that. You can explore, is war always evil for everyone involved? So the discussion becomes less abstract. Okay, you can talk about war if you never experienced it, but when you see something like that and you talk about it, it becomes more real. Or perhaps we can engage with the movie at the level of human values, the values of courage, the values of self-sacrifice portrayed by Captain Miller and his friends. And how would you feel? How do you feel as you watch the movie? How would you live differently if you were James Ryan? If somebody died for you so that you may live, how would that change your life? How would that change the way you look at life? So these are some of the ways we can engage and have dialogue, the second approach. And number three, some may even be drawn to a divine encounter through the movie, even though Steven Spielberg's purpose is not to give you a divine encounter, but still, you can have an experience like that. Jesus says, greater love has no one than he who lays down his life for his friend. And my command is this, love each other as I have loved you. You are my friends if you obey what I command. Because the fact is, someone has already died for us, isn't it? Someone has already paid the price and gave his life for us on the cross so that we might live life to the full. And if we really experience it, really get it emotionally, personally, how can it not change your life? Somebody has paid his own precious life for you. So if we really get it, we cannot live the same old way again. It's going to change everything because your life is not your own. Your life was purchased with a price. It was bought with the precious blood of Jesus Christ. So, there's a big difference between the movie and the Bible. And what's the big difference? It's the last words, right? The last words of Captain Miller. The last words of Jesus were not, "Earn this. David, earn my love. Earn this sacrifice." No, the last words of Jesus, what were the last words of Jesus as he died? "It is finished." Answer is there. Okay, good. Yeah, the last words of Jesus were, "It is finished. It is complete. It has been paid. The price has been paid. You do not need to earn my love. I have earned it for you. And my grace is free, even though it's precious and it's costly." So live a life that is worthy of the gospel, worthy of your calling as my people. So as we talk, as we engage, as we discuss and have a conversation with this movie, Saving Private Ryan, we celebrate what is good and we reject what is evil. And this conversation can serve as a window, as a bridge to connect with others who would otherwise will never step into a church or never discuss their beliefs in an open way. So movies can serve as a bridge to do that. In December, I'm going to talk to a group of students about worldviews. So normally it's a very dry topic, right? The worldviews. But when you do it through a movie, like The Matrix, they are becoming very engaged. It's a bridge builder. It connects where they are at to the question, big questions of life. So movies, like art, is a wonderful thing. It's filled with common grace, and at the same time, it's tainted by sin. So we must watch it as good stewards of the gospel. And what does it mean is that sometimes we have the courage to say no. Other times, we need to have the courage to say yes and have engage meaningfully. And on some rare occasions, it can be an opportunity for the Spirit of God to work in us through that movie and change us. So perhaps some of us here, young people who are gifted, you may even consider a vocation, a calling as a movie maker, as a filmmaker. And like Christopher Nolan, okay, the Christian director of the Batman trilogy. Okay, so some of you may be called to do that. So let me end with a passage from Scripture, Philippians chapter 4, verse 8. "Finally, brothers and sisters, whatever is true, whatever is noble, whatever is right, whatever is pure, whatever is lovely, whatever is admirable, if anything is excellent and praiseworthy, think about these things."